So, we begin this morning to address the theme of integrity, our theme for the month of November. As I worked on this theme, I found multiple aspects of integrity that I wanted to address. And so, in this morning's introductory sermon, I'm going to touch on three of those. First is, as promised, I have something to say about the difference between honesty and integrity. Second, I'll present two very different images of personal integrity, and in fact, two very different images of how we see ourselves as agents in the world. Finally, I think our faith tradition has more than any other faith tradition, calls on us to develop a very deep and careful, thought-out understanding of integrity. We're a church without a creed or a dogma, and we profess to celebrate diversity. How do we do this while preserving our own individual integrity? So let me begin with this exploration of integrity. I promised you a sermon addressing the question, is honesty enough? That title comes from an article by Stephen Carter, and you can read the complete article in the theme magazine for November. Well, Carter posits that, as you might expect, honesty is not enough. He suggests that the concept of integrity is a better standard to judge our behavior, and that integrity requires much more than simple honesty. I like the word integrity. I find it to be quite powerful. Some of the definitions don't touch close enough that idea of preserving the whole, of being internally consistent. We can speak of preserving the integrity of our borders. For just as a country has borders, so too our unique personal identity has borders. And integrity for me implies that within those borders, we be self-consistent. A simple view, of course, needs some refinement. Can a thief or a liar potentially be a person of integrity? We can certainly imagine honor and integrity among thieves. And there's lots of movies that celebrate the role of the thief or the charlatan. And we sometimes come to admire them and see them as having integrity. So I suppose the thief who makes no attempt to hide his or her occupation, except the need that's required to preserve that occupation, could be seen to be living a life of integrity. However, that's not the kind of consistency that I'm thinking of here when I speak about a life well lived. Carter provides three criteria to differentiate integrity from honesty. He writes, the first point to understand about the difference between honesty and integrity is that integrity cannot exist without the hard work of deep reflection and discernment. On the other hand, a person may be entirely honest without ever engaging in the hard work of discernment that integrity requires. A person may tell us quite truthfully what she believes without ever taking the time to figure out whether what she believes is good and right and true. The problem may be as simple as someone's foolishly saying something that hurts a friend's feelings when a few moments of thought would have revealed the likelihood of the hurt and the lack of necessity for the comment. Or the problem could be more complex. In the past election, I think that Stephen Harper was not speaking from a place of integrity when he voiced his opinions about the issues of wearing a niqab during the swearing-in portion of the citizenship ceremony. I don't believe his statements were the result of deep reflection on the correctness or the morality of that position, despite his attempts to justify it based on some idea of revealing your identity at a time of making a pledge. I like the advice of Don Miguel Ruiz in his book, The Four Agreements, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom. Speaking of the first of his four agreements, he wrote, "Speak with integrity, Say only what you mean. Avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. Carter's second point to differentiate honesty and integrity is that integrity requires that you act upon what you have discerned, even if that is done at great personal cost. A simple understanding of honesty requires that you avoid telling lies, but even if you have reached a strong belief that something is wrong, honesty in itself doesn't require that you take action. That compulsion to act after having studied a situation and come to a conclusion about its morality is a measure of integrity. And the third and last criterion that he gives is separating honesty from integrity is a requirement to say openly that you're acting on your understanding of right and wrong. This means taking a public stand, putting yourself and your reputation on the line, letting people know that you are a person who is guided by their sense of morality. Carter acknowledges that there are many interpretations of the word integrity. I'd like now to play a short motivational video on integrity done by a football player and a motivational speaker, Kevin Lott. See how this strikes you.
If you try to get it looked over, then do what you said you would do. Then you'll stand out. It's called integrity. See, nowadays we need a contract for everything. I read there was a point in time in history when a handshake was all you needed. See, if you just simply do what you said you would do, they won't look to the next individual for that promotion. They'll look to you. That new business partner, that new client, no problem. Because there's nobody else out there like you. See, there's not many people living by the code of ethics, the code of integrity. Do unto others as you want done unto you. We all know the saying, but very few of us live it. Treat every client you get as gold. See, you focus on that person as somebody who's going to pay you some money. Instead, you need to be focused on how you're going to serve them better. They came to you for a solution. Either you have an answer or you don't. See, we live in a society now where no one can be trusted. Everybody's after that next dollar. What are you looking to have? A one-time client or a client that does business with you for life? So you got to look at the bigger picture. Since integrity is hard to find, it's oftentimes the biggest attribute an individual can have. So when people find you as that business or that person who has integrity, what's going to happen? Then your business will explode. Your relationships will grow. See, these are the small intangibles that people overlook. I'm telling you. Trust my words that I'm telling you. If you have integrity, then you have everything.
An interesting take on integrity. In this view of integrity, integrity is something that you can develop and something that will bring good things to you. Integrity is about how others perceive you. It's about personal strength. It's about passion. Speaker asks, do you want a one-time customer or do you want a client for life? The implication here is that you can live with integrity by learning to keep your promises. And then in doing so, you will attract good things to yourself. This image, and much of our society's understanding of success, is rooted in pumping up the ego. Professional sports, and I wrote this before that wonderful story about the Olympics. Of course, that wasn't professional sports. So I'll stand by my story. Professional sports, arguably a much more powerful force that's shaping our society's understanding of morality, maybe a more powerful source in our society today than religion, is all about the ego. Professional sports is all about the ego. Well, I'd like now to take you from one end of the motivational spectrum to the other. Eckhart Tolle is one of the most popular spiritual teachers in North America. born and raised in Germany. Eckhart Tolle now lives in Canada, in Vancouver, I believe, present time. He's written extensively about the problems of the ego. He sees the ego as an illusory self, an illusory sense of self. He argues that the ego is not who we are, and our identification with the ego is a major aspect of human dysfunction. I'd like now to try to connect this idea with the concept of integrity. We make a big mistake when we confuse the idea of preserving our integrity with the idea of preserving our ego. When I lived in Georgia, there was a slogan, "Don't tread on me." It was an image of this coiled snake, and it was around everywhere when we were there. It was on t-shirts and bumper stickers and flags and on tattoos. The message was that any advocacy of progressive ideas was a personal attack on the individual and would be met with violence if necessary. So now I want to share a short excerpt from a presentation by Eckhart Tolle, where he talks about the idea of defending our ego.
So yes, the world is full of people who don't do what they should be doing according to your mind. But so, you have to catch yourself, if it still happens to one or two of you, when you complain about others, whatever it is, even simple things, somebody not turning up on time, and if you can step out of the complaining pattern, that unfortunately to the ego seems as if you were starving it, and unfortunately that's what it is. The ego will begin to feel, I'm shrinking. If I'm not complaining, there's less of the me. I can't blow myself up if I'm not complaining, because when you complain, you get bigger. And the louder and the more emotional the complaint is, the bigger you get, like a balloon. And then anger might be added to the complaint. So I'm fed up with these people. What rude do they think they are? So you could practice whenever you feel a complaint wants to come out of your mouth. You could practice relinquishing that and see what it feels like. At first it will feel as if something were missing in your life. And then you will feel a peace arising. Now somebody right now is thinking, do you mean I should become a doormat and allow people to do whatever they do? No. You can still, whatever information you need to convey to somebody can still be conveyed, if that's the right thing to do, without complaining. What, you can take action without complaining. If you have a handy person calling, you call somebody to repair something in your house, he doesn't turn up, and then you call him again, says, yes, I'm coming at 3, he doesn't turn up. At some point, you'd have to say, okay, I'll have to choose somebody else. And then you can call him and say, you didn't turn up 2 or 3 times, so I've decided to go with somebody else. Thanks for listening. So as a spiritual practice, then, I recommend not complaining, which doesn't mean you can't take action. We know that, no? not complaining. And it starts with not complaining out loud, and even if you stop yourself saying something, you, in the mind it may still be happening, but so then you have to get in there with your attention and see whether there's any purpose in thinking complaining thoughts in your head. So even after you have able not to speak them out aloud, still be watchful to see whether your mind is still complaining, and although you're not saying it, you're still thinking it. And when once you look at the thought, you realize that it doesn't make your life more pleasant or joyful, that kind of thought. Not really. And you can live without it. And it actually, life feels much better without it. Lighter, clearer. So.
Yeah. That's a very stoic view, I think. And I'm kind of inclined towards that. That outlook on complaining really doesn't do you much good. It's not a very helpful thing to develop. But when I was listening to that, I was thinking too about the idea of integrity. So, I mean, if you complained all your life and you enjoy getting angry, and then you decide to change that, then how do you do that with integrity? You're in the process, you're living between two worlds. So maybe we're never in, you know, the idea of integrity is something we aspire to, but if we're growing in our lives, then we're never going to be, we're never a fixed work, we're never something that is constant. So I hope you can see how defending your ego and defending your honor could be confused with the idea of defending your integrity. I think many of us here, consciously or unconsciously, practice the spiritual art of non-complaining, as Eckhart Tolle espouses. It's certainly a spiritual practice that I would highly recommend. So now I want to make some kind of concluding remarks. I said I would talk about the reason that I think integrity is something special for Unitarian Universalists, something we have to learn to grapple with. A member of this congregation, after looking at this month's theme magazine on integrity, commented, "I now have a much better understanding of what integrity means to a Unitarian. While I appreciate that sentiment, I was wondering later about the idea that there is a Unitarian Universalist interpretation of integrity, or a Unitarian Universalist interpretation of any particular concept. Now, this may make you a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm still exploring this ground, and you've probably picked up on this in other sermons. What makes us unique as a religious movement is our celebration of diversity. And we are a creedless faith. We don't require people who attend our churches to believe, to sign up for certain concepts. I know when you come here, there are certain things that you feel that the people around you share, and that makes you comfortable. But the more we focus on that, the smaller group we become, the more we shrink and become like any other church. We may not have a written dogma or a written creed, but we'll have a de facto one. So the challenge that that Unitarian Universalism, has risen to is the challenge to live in a community where we each can be true to our own unique vision of that which gives meaning to our lives, without feeling that we need to defend that position from attack. I like to think that Unitarians believe in helping others to grow spiritually, not by convincing them with compelling arguments, but by living a life of integrity, a life that is a model for their beliefs. we come together in community as people with diverse theological understandings. We are atheists and theists, humanists and agnostics, Christians and Buddhists, and Wiccan and more. And we come in every color of the theological spectrum. And you're welcome here, provided you can live in covenant, provided you can live with respect for those around you. This leads to a particular problem for Unitarian Universalist ministers, especially so when there's only one Unitarian Universalist congregation in a community. How can I serve all these diverse theologies and ideologies while preserving my own integrity? I cannot hope to embody all the views that a Unitarian might hold on a given topic or a given moral issue. What I must do is try to hold the space open, a safe space, where all of these views can be expressed and shared and given a sympathetic hearing. The time in our service of congregational reflection is a spiritual practice, a practice that embodies our belief in diversity, our belief in an open and safe space, a time and a space to be who we are with integrity and without fear of attack or need for debate. That's why we structured our time for congregational reflection not as a give and take between ministers where we might get into an argument or something, but a time when you can express what you feel deeply and others can listen respectfully. Within our UU community, our personal spiritual borders must be secure. Here we can each live with a sense of our own integrity without the need to be defensive or to require others to conform to our spiritual vision. In this faith tradition, we preserve our individual spiritual integrity, our personal spiritual boundaries within a larger supportive community that celebrates spiritual diversity. I believe it's a model that our world needs. As it says on our webpage, we live the words of Edwin Markham. He drew a circle that shut me out, a heretic, a rebel, a thing to float. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. May it be so.